topic that I have this afternoon is food preservation, which is a, the way I see it, is a continuation of the topic that Dr. Pribis just said. It's a food safety. But in terms of food preservation, we're not just concerned about the safety, but also, preserving the food so that it stays safe when we eat it, and also preserving the food so that we can maintain the quality. Okay, so we will look at closer into that. In talking about food preservation, it's a must that we look at food spoilage. So what is actually food spoilage? When do we say that the food is spoiled? It's spoiled when there's a decline in eating quality, that is appearance, taste, texture, or odor. It is spoiled because decomposed or being eaten by creatures other than human. So food for humans supposed to be eaten by human only, not by the mold that you see here. Yeah, that's no. Okay. So changes in food spoilage. What can cause food to be spoiled? What can cause this apple on the top have black specks and just we don't want to touch it? There are three major categories: biological, chemical, and physical. Biological is mostly what was said just before this presentation. Growth of bacteria, yeast, and molds, and other microorganisms, things that we cannot see with our eyes. Chemical, enzymatic decomposition. Enzymatic decomposition, we cannot avoid that because food, especially fruits and vegetables, they are living matters also. Physical, water loss or separation during storage. This physical is things that we can control, or actually we are controlling the quality, controlling the chemical and biological spoilage by physical means. Okay, food preservation. These are the two main principles of food preservation. If we know how to do this, we are successful in preserving food. Prevent or delay microbial decomposition. Prevent or delay self-decomposition. The first part that deals with microbial decomposition, that is we are preserving the food to stay safe. This is the first section. There is the part that we are dealing with food safety issue. The second part, prevent or delay self-decomposition. That is when we are trying to maintain the quality of the food. A really good example, a straightforward example for these two is that for the first part is when you see an apple and there is hole and the worms are growing in it. That is food safety. The second one, it's dealing with food quality. Let's say the same apple does not have any holes, but it's been staying in the kitchen for a long time. We bought it for a long time and eventually it deteriorates just because of the enzymatic action in the food itself. So by this time, I want you to have a clear separation in your mind, food safety and food quality. In food preservation, we are trying to hit as an overall, stay safe and maintaining the quality. And you can just see that there are ways to do that. Methods of preservation. I'm going to go really fast because some slides I will talk there. I have slides about canning and stuff, so that has been mentioned. Thank you. So that I can go faster on that. Temperature control, heating or freezing. That's modify the temperature. Moisture control. Pretty much we are controlling the moisture so that the bacteria cannot use the moisture to live. That moist food is only for us, not for anything else. Preservative is when we are using food additives. Ionizing radiation also have been talked about. Drying, this is when we do moisture modification. It is about the easiest or the most primitive way of food preservation. It has been done it's been a long, long time. Bacteria and mold needs 15% of moisture. Yeast needs 20% of moisture. We as human being, we need water to live. So are the microorganisms. The yeast, the bacteria, the mold, the rats, the worms, everything needs moisture. So if we can keep that out or turn the moisture down in terms of drying, then we can avoid those that can grow in the food. So in looking at that, if we can dry food to go lower than 15%, we can protect the food from bacteria, mold, and the yeast. Freeze drying. This is just one technology that I put here. It's freeze drying. It's drying in a freezing temperature. What's good about this is that we know nutrients can get destroyed with the heat. So with freeze drying, we can protect the nutrients and we can also protect the flavor also. So how is it done that water can evaporate in the freezing temperature? It's done by, if you see here on the right hand side, you can see there's a vacuum pump. So it is drying in the environment in the vacuum environment. So the water can dry or can evaporate much lower than 100 degrees Celsius. It is a sublimation process, has a sublimation principle. Solid changes directly to vapor without passing through the liquid phase. So this is actually has been done a lot, and a good example would be food for the astronauts. But we can find this food even though we're not astronauts. We can eat that too. Salting and sugaring also falls under this category also. This is a way to modify the moisture. This is a way to modify the availability of water that is in our food. The salt or sugar binds the water so tightly so that it cannot be used by the microorganism. Canning, I'm going to go fast, it has a sterilization effect, so it kills the pathogens and everything else. Two methods of canning. This is Dr. Privis mentioned earlier. The two in canning that we have to pay attention to bacteria that can survive in the canning process. In looking at that, we need to categorize canning into what kind of food that we are canning. Is the food acidic or the food not acidic? If the food is acidic, we don't worry much about pathogens. We worry more about the quality, because having acidic pH, it's a self-selection of microorganisms that can grow. Pressure canning. This is the canning process that is absolutely necessary for food that are not acidic, like when you're canning corn, mushroom, beans. If any of your clients or you run into people that can't, or preserve meat for canning, or this non-acidic food that has a pH higher than 4.6, this is the category of food that we need to worry about the Clostridium botulinum. Because Clostridium botulinum, like it was mentioned earlier, is anaerobic. Even if it's still living, if the spore is still living, you close it tightly, it can still grow. The scariest part is that it has no color, has no flavor, has no odor. And it causes paralysis, and what they call is the descending paralysis. So the paralysis goes from the top to the bottom. When it hits the paralysis in the respiratory muscle, then we're done. So we don't want that. With the pressure canning, the reason for pressure canning is that when you apply high pressure, the temperature of the food can be much higher than boiling temperature. That will ensure the death for the spores. Cold preservation, I have refrigeration. I'm going to just breeze through. There's freezing. And what we need to know about freezing is that, well, we know refrigeration, food does not last long, even when we refrigerate it. It's just delayed the decomposition because the enzyme is not as active in the cold temperature. But it can dry up the food. So make sure that the food that you preserve, you don't put it in the refrigerator for a long time because it can get really dried up. And the freezing, freezing does not kill microorganisms, and it does not kill the enzymes. So when you freeze the food, it can still deteriorate in a slower time, or it will go bad in a longer period of time. Because yes, it's slower, but everything else is still going. Heat preservation, boiling is the very simple one. Blanching. This is blanching is sometimes that we don't realize the importance of blanching. What is blanching? Scalding in boiling water for 1 to 2 minutes, then ice water. Let's look at the purpose of blanching because it's important and we sometimes forget. Destroy enzymatic activity in fruits and vegetables prior to further processing. Like I said earlier, freezing does not destroy enzyme. And freezing does not destroy enzymes. So let's say if we freeze asparagus, for example, the maturing enzyme that will eventually make asparagus has a texture of wood, you know, very stringy, it will still be active. With blanching, we kill most of those enzymes and the food can last longer. Reduce microbial load to ensure safety. That's the safety concern. Soften tissue to facilitate filling and heat transfer. This is, let's say, for example, for canning process. So before we can the food, it is beneficial to blanch it first. Pasteurization, I'm going to just highlight the last section there. That, again, we have mentioned that for food, that low acid, that is higher pH, we have to make sure pathogens are destroyed. But for the acidic food, we want to destroy the enzymes. Ultra-high pasteurization, this has a higher temperature. If you have gone to the grocery stores and you see milk, some milk is stored in the refrigerated section, some milk is stored in the non-refrigerated section. The one that are not in the refrigerated section, it has gone through the ultra-high pasteurization, ultra-high temperature pasteurization, because it has a sterilization effect. So yes, those milk that are not stored in the refrigerator are okay, unless they forgot to put it in the refrigerator, but I hope not. Other methods that you can go through yourself. And the next one is grain storage. So grain is, let's look at this quote here. Pre-harvest control measures are compromised by men's ability to control the climate. We can never control the climate. So the pre-harvest control that the farmers has done carefully, it can still get compromised because we cannot control the climate. So storing the grains, what we need to think about or what we need to keep in mind in storing grains is the mold growth. It's really important. We will look at insect also in a bit. So how do we control the mold growth? We need to look at temperature, moisture, and pest. Very important, drying process before it's being stored. The ISO and the Codex standards, they are determined as 15.5. That's an average. Some want it lower. Some 15.5 is about the maximum. Segregation. So now what happens if the grain has been contaminated? As much as we can, we would like to separate those contaminated sections. Sometimes we are not able to get 100% guaranteed contaminated, 100% free. If we have to compromise with some contamination, these are the levels that are allowed for mycotoxins. There are mold toxins that are produced by mold. So these are the standards, the levels that are allowed. Mycotoxin contamination. So again, if the mold has grown and we would like to make sure that there is no mycotoxin or destroy the mycotoxin, we can do it by ammoniation. That has been done around the world. A lot of people have done this. Insect management, there can be fumigants and contact insects. And phosphine and methyl bromides are the two most common fumigants that are used. Although treatment of carbon dioxide can be used also. If you look at their carbon dioxide use in a controlled atmosphere storage, that is gas tight, they need oxygen to grow. So if we spray it with carbon dioxide and just suffocate them with carbon dioxide, then it can be done also. Grain moisture content, again, is important. If here I wrote control to prevent mold will lessen insect infestation. So if we have controlled the moisture to reduce the mold growth, we can also reduce the insect growth because, again, just like human, mold insects, they need moisture to grow. Temperature, 60% of 60 degrees Celsius heated air can't have disinfectation effect without the damage of wheat grain because the temperature is not so high that it will damage. Oxygen supply, just like I mentioned earlier, oxygen supply, if the grain has been reduced to 12 to 13% moisture content, they are dormant. They don't respire. So there's no more oxygen production. Eventually, if there's insect that gets trapped during when you close the container, with the 12 to 13% moisture, eventually within 6 to 8 weeks, that insect will die. Because during that time, at the end of that time, the oxygen supply will go down to 2% and they cannot survive with just 2% oxygen environment. Physical disturbance. I found this interesting that the insect population or the number of insects growth can just decrease by just shaking the container, just tumbling the container. Okay, we can do it by machine. There's mechanical high-speed impact. And in some places, they don't have that privilege that have a mechanical high-speed impact. What they do is just there are workers that tumbles the cylindrical containers twice a day. Of course, if that's the way to go, you cannot fill the containers very full. Because if you fill it full to the top, you are not creating any disturbance while you're tumbling the container. Traditional grain protectant, you can find this, like that some oils or some oils that you can find in the kitchen, they can protect also. And there are research that are coming out for this, so we should wait on that. Mineral dust is also useful. Rodent control. Rodent control, rat problems can be almost anywhere. Especially in the tropics, because again, rats like moisture, like food. So wherever we provide the moisture, we provide the nutrients, we provide the food, rats can be there. Just like human, when there's free food, we come together, everybody. Sanitation in and around the storage. Rats actually, they do not like clear spaces. So when the space is crowded, there's a lot of places to hide. They don't like clear spaces because they're afraid of us. When they are in a clear space, they are easier to be seen. So they don't want clear spaces. So that's what we are going to give them so that we don't have rats. Proving wooden doors, metal strips at the bottom. So because rats can squeeze in a very, very tiny place. We want to make sure we don't have any tiny space that they can squeeze in. Windows, get a wire net with a small net with metal frames. Floors and walls, make sure it's hole free because rat can go in. Natural prevention. This actually, there's a study was done in Myanmar that of natural prevention to get rid of, to have no rats is to get a cat. The cat, the houses that they found in their study that houses that has cats, they don't have rats. But houses that don't have cats, they have rats. But also they found that the way cat prevents is not because the cat eat those mouse, those rats, but just having the rats that the cats, it will scare the rats. So the rats doesn't even come. So get a cat.
And they live together.
They live together, but I hope not. I hope they don't get along someday. Thank you, and I hope you can enjoy your food safely with a good quality. and do not have stomach ache. Thank you.